You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome in to a Monday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host and all-around Brooklyn Nets expert, Gavin Shaw, and I'm joined remotely by the lifelong fan, fresh off a business meeting, the Joshua Bass. And Josh, you also got to watch the Nets take on the Atlanta Hawks tonight, and we are going to talk about that too.
Yeah, Gavin, it was great. My meeting ended early, and I was expecting to miss the first quarter of the Nets game, but was able to work remotely a little bit and get to watch some very good Brooklyn Nets basketball. And it's crazy how much my mood fluctuates depending on the success of the team. So I guess that means I have been in a very good mood the last few years.
Well, the Nets had their largest lead of the season in this game. They were up by, I think, as many as 26 points. Then they ended up winning by 20, 110-90, the final, just two nights after the Nets, or two afternoons, I guess, because they played early, after the Nets fell to the Hawks in Brooklyn. And Josh, I bet the highest point of your euphoria was when Jared Allen had, if my math holds serve, five dunks in about 3.5 minutes of game time.
I think the final count was actually four dunks, but you know, there was so many, it was hard to keep track of. It was kind of like a game of NBA 2K, and that you just kept going to it, and the defense couldn't stop it. So why move away from something that works? And his wingspan, I know we talk about it a lot, but at 7'6" wingspan, he can really dunk from angles that a lot of people can't. And once he's catching the ball and being able to load up cleanly, it's really hard to stop him when he gets that close inside.
Yeah, we've made the comparison before, but to me, it was reminiscent of when JaVale McGee was really rolling in the playoffs last year, particularly during that Portland Trailblazers series, where just obviously the Warriors have significantly better surrounding talent, so the lanes were even more open, but it was just like a defense couldn't handle the concept of shooters around a rim roller that dynamic. And Jared Allen all year has really struggled with his hands on those plays, not really able to catch the ball and not always strong enough to get a rebound and go up and finish. But that's actually what started the run this time around. Ersan Ilyasova had position in front of him under the basket, and Allen just went up and over him and then just flushed it with one hand. And what really excited me was there was real force behind it. It's one thing to be long, but to have kind of that natural power, that's when you really start to scare other teams under the basket. And the other part of it that was really fun to me was that the guy that was assisting him on, I think it was either two or three of them were the final tally. I know there were two lobs and then one where he drove in and gave it to him was Caris LeVert. And this is the second game in a row they've connected on an alley-oop. So they're really starting to develop nice chemistry. And I don't know about you, but that really got my Nets adrenaline going. I'm excited about those two.
Yeah, I mean, LeVert's had an inconsistent year, but to see him develop chemistry with another young Nets player that a lot of people have high hopes for is great to see. And how about Allen hitting a three and also blocking four shots? He really did everything tonight.
Yeah, and that was in what? That was only 21 minutes, 11 points, four blocks. Yeah, he's starting to look like a total game changer on the defensive end. And Nets fans would still be well within their rights to be upset that the Nets didn't end up with Kyle Kuzma, who obviously got picked with what was formerly their draft slot, and the Lakers got him. But Jared Allen is looking, and again, you don't want to overreact to one good game, but this has been a trend all year. We've seen the athletic ability. We've seen the tools. He just kind of had to get his confidence up, and it seems like now that that's coming, he's already turning into an effective NBA player, I think, at least for me, maybe even a year or two ahead of time. Again, it's one thing to do it against the Hawks. He's going to have to do it against better teams, but I really like the way things are trending with him. And for LeVert, I think you can make a pretty compelling argument. This was his best all-around game on the season, 17 points, 7 assists, 7 of 13 from the field. I loved his passing. He was really unselfish, and it was just like smart passes too. And the biggest thing was he just seemed so under control relative to where he was earlier in the season, where it seemed like he wasn't getting as many touches, and in turn he was kind of rushing everything when he did get the basketball. But this time, so calm. He hit those two pull-ups in the first half, and he just looked so smooth, and it just, to me, like the total opposite of how he was playing earlier in the season.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, LeVert started off the game 4-4, was really hot, and then kind of slowed down, rushed some shots, turned the ball over a little bit. So then you're thinking, oh, maybe his confidence is down. He's going to struggle in the second half. But he really picked it back up, doing a nice job of getting to that pull-up, as you mentioned, and finding Allen on a bunch of feeds. So it's great to see him rebound from a poor stretch at the end of the second quarter and really show that he is kind of getting over those issues. And I think as he gets more reps in the backup point guard spot, he's going to feel a little bit more comfortable. Obviously, he still has to put it together, and that three-point shot is a big question mark. But it's great to see him have success, even if it's against a team like the Hawks.
Yeah, absolutely. And then across the board, just a much stronger effort than two nights ago. Even in this one, Atlanta was essentially playing the Nets even for a half, leading, in fact, for most of that second quarter. But then the Nets come out in the third with a 17-0 run. And we mentioned LeVert and Allen kind of providing the final knockout blow at the end of the third into the beginning of the fourth. But guys like Spencer Dinwiddie continue to play really, really well. I love the chemistry he's building with Tyler Zeller and Damari Carroll, like just setting them up time and time again. It just seemed like everyone was really engaged. And again, I'll say everything talking about this game of the qualifier, it was the Hawks, arguably the second or third least talented roster in all of basketball. But it just seemed like everyone was clicking tonight, and they really played like a near perfect team game. Like this is exactly what I want to see, just from kind of an aesthetic perspective in terms of passing, ball movement, and shooting.
Well, I have to disagree with you, Gavin. I thought the Nets really didn't play that well. I mean, turning the ball over 23 times and still winning by 20 points. I'm not sure how many times that's happened, but I thought they were pretty sloppy. But I think they just kind of did enough where getting offensive rebounds, hitting a lot of threes, and the Hawks were pretty just abysmal in the second half, as a stark contrast to Sunday's game. Or was it Sunday or Saturday?
Saturday.
Saturday. Yeah. Saturday's game, where the Hawks were just hitting everything in the second half, and Luke Babbitt was giving me nightmares. They just couldn't put it together, and I think the Nets did enough to capitalize. Obviously, the turnovers have been a concern all year, and when you have your starting backcourt go down for the season, you know, a lot of people are going to have to handle more ball handling responsibility. But I thought Spencer Dinwiddie did a great job. Again, we've talked all season about his assist to turnover ratio, and I thought the Nets kind of got back on track at the end of the second quarter, when he was running a lot more pick and roll instead of just being used as a spot up shooter off the ball. So I think I'd like to see him get a little bit more pick and roll responsibilities, but also Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, the guy started off terribly, was 1 of 9 from the field, could not make anything. We've had questions about his lift and how explosive he is finishing around the rim, but he picked it up at the end of the game, went 5 for 5 from the field after going 1 of 9, and finished with a very respectable game of 16 points and 10 rebounds.
Yeah, I guess I was mostly referencing the second half, but yeah, I don't know. I thought everyone was kind of in tune with one another, and there were some bad turnovers, but I don't mind those as much when they're a product of a team trying to overpass, and there just weren't really guys like stopping the ball this game in any meaningful way, and it was kind of like perfect teamwork in my mind, and that was true on the defensive end also. Like, we were just fresh off complaining two nights ago about how they were overhelping and leaving shooters open, and just not really playing smartly against a team with a limited offensive skill set. And tonight, it was kind of similar to the Grizzlies game a week back, where they just executed a game plan kind of perfectly against a team that was really vulnerable. They let Dennis Schroeder kind of get his, but outside of that, no one on the Hawks really shot particularly well, and that was a symptom of the Nets staying on their guys, helping a little bit, but not to the degree that like they were just leaving shooters wide open and creating driving holes. They were kind of on the point defensively, and I think that's all they needed to really dominate this Hawks team.
Yeah, they did a much better job containing Schroeder in the second half. I think he had 17 at the end of the first half, only finished the game with 19. He's such a weird player for me, because I kind of feel like he's like a completely ancillary part of this Hawks team, where there's the Hawks team as a whole, and then like just on the side is him just doing his own thing. He kind of seems like a college point guard in that sense, where he's just on a team of complete scrubs and he's just shooting every time to kind of manufacture offense. And even if it's not the most efficient, he's gonna score. He's gonna put up kind of 18 to 20 either way, because I really like can't remember him making any sort of like pass or impact with a teammate this entire game.
Yeah. No, I don't. I've never been really a big fan of his. I'll
like
leave it at
talent.
That.
I feel like he always plays well in the playoffs.
Yeah. He's like he, I don't know, he kind of reminds me of, like, Reggie Jackson, and, like, they're both probably, like, solid players, and, like, the fact that I don't love either of them is more symptomatic of just how deep the point guard position is throughout the NBA, but they both strike me as guys who, on really good teams, would be, like, sixth men, and just kind of, like, lead second units and, like, attack the basket, because they just don't really have the complete game that a lot of their contemporaries have, and it just seems to be more about scoring for both of them. I don't know. That's most of what I had to say on this game. Shout out to Trevor Booker too. Like, he was terrible last time these two teams played, and this time he was really good moving the basketball. If you remember, he had the assist to Jared Allen on that three ball, and it was kind of a cool play, just because, like, how often do you see your power forward setting up your center for a three pointer? And it was kind of it was like the microcosm of, like, the skill ball the Nets want to play. So I like that he rebounded pretty well. And, yeah, those were kind of the guys I was focused on tonight.
Right. Also, can we just talk about just a testament to the Nets coaching staff that they've been able to kind of cobble a somewhat respectable center rotation together out of Tyler Zeller and Jared Allen. Earlier this year when Mozgov was kind of entrenched as the starter, things looked dire, but I have to give Kenny Atkinson and his squad kudos for realizing that Mozgov was kind of a lost cause and just doing anything possible to see if we can get a little bit of energy. And Tyler Zeller's provided that since he's been inserted into the starting lineup, and Jared Allen is starting to do that as well, of course.
Yeah, for sure. Sean Kilpatrick only playing 5 minutes this game. I think with everyone healthy, like, again, like, we both kind of made our peace with it. Yeah. I think it makes
AC
sense.
Should not out of play rotation. Also.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah,
AC is abysmal. I can't stand him.
He had one really cool pass, but yeah, that was, yeah. He doesn't, when he's not hitting threes, he's not effective. And
yeah, well, he's doing this thing now where he, like, thinks he's a driver. And, like, whenever he gets a decent look at three, he'll just pass it up to drive into the middle of the lane, but it just goes nowhere. And it's either a charge or he's throwing the ball away. And I just don't need to see him anymore, especially with Zeller's emergence. And Booker can kind of shift to playing the four full time. So I think between Booker, RHJ, Damari, there's no real need for him to get any minutes at the four.
Yeah, I agree with you. You can kind of up the other guys' minutes a little bit more, like Tyler Zeller, even though he's a defensive liability, and that's really going to show up against some teams could play a little bit more than 16. Jared Allen, I know they want the minutes restriction on, but if he keeps playing the way he has been, I think they're going to have to play him closer to 25 minutes a game instead of 21, which is probably pretty close to a season high tonight. There are ways for them to get better on those margins, and just I think cutting AC and Harris, not Harris, AC and Kilpatrick out of the rotation make the most sense.
How dare you insult Harris?
No, like that's my boy. I love him. I got so fired up when he got that offensive rebound, and like he didn't get the putback, but he got fouled on it. But when he was surrounded by like three or four Hawks on, it was like kind of a fast break, but that's the biggest thing that shocked me about him. His like willingness to go to the basket is what was totally unexpected for me.
Yeah, it's definitely like one of his most underrated traits. And I think Sarah Kustak talked about this on the broadcast a few games ago. But, you know, he's like a legit 6'6", broad-shouldered. So he can take contact going to the rim. He's obviously not the most explosive finisher, but he does a good job of drawing contact when he gets there. And he can be strong enough to finish through that in some cases.
Yeah, and continuing like a long-held NBA tradition of Lemmy ISO against the white guy, there's a play where like Taurean Prince like had it in the corner and was like thought he was just gonna like bully Harris under the basket and dunk on him, and like Harris like stood his ground, so I got like a little bit fired up at that, because Harris is like a pretty good defender, and you see it happen to Joe Harris, you see it, and it's a big, maybe it's just Joe's, maybe I'm projecting too much with the white guy thing, but it's a Joe Inglis too. I remember on Zach Lowe's podcast he was talking about how that always happens to him, and then like I see it happen to Joe Harris quite a bit, and both those guys are not great defensively, but they're pretty solid. So it was nice to see Joe kind of stand up for himself there. All right.
How many American white guys are there in the league? Because there was five playing tonight, and I feel like there can't be more than
I'm trying to think. Yeah,
the entire league.
Probably. I feel like there are like less and less now that like international scouting is getting better. Those guys are kind of falling by the wayside. And I think it's a little bit sad that Kevin Love is probably the best in that demographic in the NBA right now.
Well, he's still a top 30 player, so yeah, I guess. You know, you can't hate on the guy too much.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Porzingis adopts American citizenship and we can claim him as one of our own. Anyways, the Nets going outside of the country for two quote-unquote home games, taking on Oklahoma City and Miami in Mexico City. What do we think of those two games? Oklahoma City, obviously, I don't even have to say probably. I'll stick with obviously. The most disappointing team in the NBA so far, 10-12 at the bottom of the Northwest Division. What do you make of that one? Is that a game where the Thunder just kind of get it together and blow the Nets out? Or do you think the Nets, who have been playing slightly better basketball of late, can maybe sneak one by them?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. The Thunder just played the Spurs. The Spurs basically B-League team because no Aldridge and no Kawhi Leonard, and it was a very close game until the end. You kind of have to say the Oklahoma City Thunder are a huge favorite in that game, considering this huge talent disparity. But I think the Nets can give them some problems, just forcing them into bad shot selection, and hopefully just running their system crisply enough where they can get open threes. And you know, the last few games they've been hitting those threes, and if that continues, they have as good a shot as anyone. But can I just point out this really funny tweet that I saw?
I'd love you to. Yeah.
So Real Deal Neil on Twitter, shout out to him. He just tweeted saying, Jared Allen used four you knows in his post-game interview. Still room to grow, but potentially a worthy successor to Brook Lopez. And Brook Lopez is known for saying you know constantly in interviews. I think you can find one online of him. Just check YouTube, search Brook Lopez you know, and I think he said it maybe 15 times in the span of a minute.
I feel like that was just, I have a feeling that was like...
I really laughed.
Yeah, it could have just been Brook Lopez. Like, do you think it was just like a troll job, or that's just like one of like just like a phrase that he just goes to?
I think that's just his phrase.
Okay, because with Brook Lopez, I could see him just trolling the media and like kind of just trying to be like a stereotypical athlete and just throwing out like I don't know, like the same one liner every time to explain stuff. But yeah, Jared Allen, proud tradition. I love to hear it. All right, and then the Nets take on the Miami Heat, who have, I think they played well the other night, but in general, they've been kind of struggling without Hassan Whiteside. I watched the Knicks last week run them out of the building with no Kristaps Porzingis, so that was pretty telling, and they frankly just looked like terrible. If they bring their maximum effort, they're kind of, I guess we would know Whiteside. In a lot of ways, they're like the same team as the Nets. They have like a great engine.
Well, Olynyk's a terrible matchup for the Nets.
Yeah. I'm just throwing out there, like, they're like no Whiteside, they're just built like very similar. Like they both have like really good point guards that are good at attacking the basket, can shoot the three ball really well, and then just like a bunch of like weird pieces around them, and then everyone plays really hard and they kind of just make it work. Whiteside would be the difference there. If he's not healthy at that point, then that game could very much be a toss-up.
Yeah, he's out. Is Kilpatrick the Dion Waiters equivalent?
Yeah, let's go with that.
I think that I would be a little disappointed if the Nets can't take one of these games, because even though coming into the season, both Oklahoma City and Miami had significant playoff aspirations and people thought they were both going to be really good, especially in Oklahoma City's case, they haven't proven that over a quarter of the way into the season. And, you know, the Nets are playing pretty well. They give consistent effort most nights. Obviously, the Hawks game on Saturday was a disappointment, but I think that Kenny Atkinson is going to have them fired up. And remember, these are two home games for the Nets, so maybe there'll be some magic in Mexico City.
Ooh, that sounds like the title of a great romance novel. I might quit the podcast and go write that. I'll throw this out there for Miami. I think if nothing else, Tyler Johnson should do his best to throw the game, given that the Nets made him $50 million.
He owes us.
Yeah, 100%. So I'd like to see that from Tyler Johnson. If he's a real dude and if he's true to repaying his debts, then he should do everything he can to maybe take Goran Dragic out for a night drinking in Mexico City beforehand, and then miss a couple shots during the game. With that, we will wrap up this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We will be back. I'd like to record with you, Josh, Thursday night. Even though that Thunder game is kind of late for both of us, so I think more realistically, we'll end up putting it out Friday.
I don't want to disappoint you, but I have my office holiday party Thursday night.
Oh,
I don't
God.
Know
what
you
okay,
this
well,
on air, so that's
no, but that,
just a no.
That might be ideal, because the game doesn't start until 10, so maybe you'll get home, catch the second half, and then...
All right, it is right by your house, so...
Oh, cool.
It doesn't start till 10, the game?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, so just, you can swing by after, we'll make it a late night, we'll have some fun.
Sounds a little weird.
All right. Well, okay.
All right, I wanted to just have a bros night in, but that's fine. Okay, so I'll probably watch that Friday and get that out to you Friday night, and then you know what? Let's figure something out for Wednesday because I want to do another podcast this week. Anyways, that'll just about wrap up the Locked On Nets podcast. Please subscribe and give us a rating and review on iTunes. We love to see them. We love to read what you think about the podcast, and throw us 5 stars, even if you don't like the podcast that much. It would be really nice, and I know Josh would appreciate it. For Josh, I'm Gavin. Peace out. All right.